I'm Sean Yeo, your host. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Wednesday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yeo. That is my name. S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S, or go to my Facebook page if you have information, insight, or breaking news that you want to share with me. I'll share it with the people unless you don't want me to, and of course, I won't do it. coming up in the second hour of the show on this Wellness Wednesday, Kenyatta Moon, founder of the Interim Academy for Holistic Thought, is back. She's co-host of the Holistic Living segment. She's going to be talking about gratitude. Amen to that. Amen and amen. Because there's so much for us to be thankful for, whether we realize it or not. Also coming up in the second hour, Lamont Summers will be back. He is assistant professor of media law and ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. He will have the media report, the man for all the answers. A little bit later in this first hour, the Mod Squad will be here. That's Stephen Janis and Taya Graham of the Real News Network. People wanting to call in already. I haven't even said anything yet. People are already ready to call into the show. But the Mod Squad will be coming up at 5:30, reporting on law enforcement and politics. Some unfortunate, crazy crime news in Baltimore that we'll get into during that segment, among other things. But first, we're going to open the phone lines to talk national politics and to discuss the ever-embattled Trump White House. The latest allegations, the latest bombshell allegations coming out of that entrenched now and has been entrenched White House connected to Donald Trump Jr. Is involving emails. That's a familiar theme. They rode the email bandwagon all the way into the White House, and now it could be their undoing. Tell me karma is not real. Donald Trump Jr.'s email exchange with Russians, various Russians, has certain members of the Senate, Richard Blumenthal. Blumenthal is from Connecticut. He's up north somewhere. I can't remember the exact state. Richard Blumenthal talking treason. And for those of you who don't know or don't remember, treason is a crime punishable by death. I'm just saying that's what Richard Blumenthal said. But what we're going to do is we're going to listen to Richard Blumenthal in a moment. We're also going to listen to sound of Richard Blumenthal talking, I believe, to CNN. Then we're going to listen to Donald Trump Jr. himself on the Sean Hannity Show, the friendliest format he could possibly find. On the Sean Hannity Show, still sounding confused and sounding like he's lying, quite frankly. This is the most serious of all the craziness attached. And when I say craziness, I don't mean that in a light way, because it's all very deadly serious, literally deadly serious. Of all of the insanity connected to the Trump White House, this may be the most serious allegation yet. These may be the most serious charges leveled yet against the Trump administration, specifically Donald Trump himself, his family, his colleagues. This is serious stuff, and it has Washington abuzz. So we want to open the phone lines now, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. After all that has transpired already in the first 100-plus days, however many months of this Trump presidency we've seen, after we hear these allegations about Don Trump Jr. and the Russians, again, Senator Blumenthal, who we're going to hear from in a moment, What else has to happen in your minds? What else has to happen for serious talk, serious discussion about impeachment of the 45th president of the United States? What else has to happen? Have we reached that threshold yet? And that's the question to our listeners. 410-319-8888 is the number. As you call in, we will play sound of Richard Blumenthal talking treason. Let's listen to Richard Blumenthal first. Okay, we are trying to bring that sound up. Of Senator Richard Blumenthal talking to CNN this morning. I think we have it. Let's go to it.
This morning with these emails.
As a former prosecutor, my reaction was these emails are a textbook example and evidence of criminal intent. I can almost hear the closing argument of the jury using, "I love it," repeating again and again, "I love it." Those three words are going to haunt Donald Trump Jr. because they are a clear signal that he is looking for information, dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russian government, and expecting an agent of the Russian government to be providing it to him, and having the meeting, showing and again signaling the Trump campaign is open for business. We will accept information no matter how it is obtained, legally or illegally. And that is potentially a violation of the Espionage Act, yes, treason, and it is also potentially a violation of the prohibitions against defrauding the government through conspiracy, against cyber fraud and abuse. There are a slew of statutes that may have been violated here, but the bottom line is that we are beginning to understand why Donald Trump, the president, may have been so eager to fire Jim Comey if he felt that his own son was at risk.
So that is Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. You heard the word treason mentioned during Richard Blumenthal's talk with CNN this morning. Treason mentioned, connected to this these latest allegations of Donald Trump Jr. and his discussions with the Russians, looking for quote unquote dirt on Hillary Clinton. We heard Donald Trump Jr. also, I believe it was last night, talking to Sean Hannity, who the most friendly audience, literally the most friendly quote unquote journalist, because I don't necessarily consider Sean Hannity's not a journalist, actually. He's a commentator, I would call him. But Donald Trump Jr. was on Sean Hannity's show last night, and he was asked about the email exchange. And you can listen for yourself. Let's listen to Donald Trump Jr.
And give you a chance to look at this. This is the one that says the Crown Prosecutor of Russia met with his father, meaning Emin's father, and in their meeting offered to provide the Trump campaign with documents, information that could incriminate Hillary Clinton, etc. Obviously highly sensitive information, but as part of Russia and its government support of Mr. Trump. And then they asked the best way to handle this. This email comes in. What are you thinking?
Honestly, my takeaway when all of this was going on is that someone has information on our opponent. You know, things are going a million miles an hour. You know what it's like to be on a campaign. We just won Indiana, but we're talking about a contested convention. Things are going a million miles an hour again. And, hey, wait a minute. I've heard about all these things, but maybe this is something. I should hear them out.
Okay. When you read the parts about the Russian government or Russia supporting your father, did that put off any sirens in your head?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think this was, again, just basic information that was going to be possibly there. I didn't know these guys well enough to understand that if this talent manager from Miss Universe, you know, had this kind of thing. So I wanted to hear him out and play it out and see what happens. But, you know, people are trying to reach out to you all the time with this.
All right. So you spent a lot of time talking about it, and you actually said at one point that, hey, if it turns out to say what you say it is.
Of course.
What did you think it might be?
Listen, I I'd been reading about scandals that people were probably underreporting for a long time. So maybe it was something that had to do with one of those things. I mean, this was her, perhaps, involvement with the Russian government. So, you know, again, I didn't know there was any credibility. I didn't know if there was anything behind it. I can't vouch for the information. You know, someone sent me an email. I can't help what someone sends me. You know, I read it. I responded accordingly. And if there was something interesting there, I think it's pretty common.
What about the timeline of this? This is pre, for example, WikiLeaks and the DNC emails.
This is pre, like, Russia fever. This is pre-Russia mania. You know, this was 13 months ago before. I think the rest of the world was talking about that, trying to build up this narrative about Russia. So I don't even think my sirens, you know, went up or the antennas went up at this time because of it, because it wasn't the issue that it's been made out to be over the last, you know, 9 months, 10 months since it really became a thing. So I think there is an element of context to that. At the time, it wasn't this big news story.
All right. What did you know about Emin's father? What did you know about them from Moscow? Was it just the pageant you met them at?
They had the
pageant,
and they're successful real estate developers over there. So, you know, that's the extent of, you know.
So we just heard from Donald Trump Jr. talking to Sean Hannity. Earlier, we heard Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut talking to Wolf Blitzer this morning on CNN. Now we want to hear from our listeners, 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 is I give the ID. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. We are talking about the Trump administration and the fact that, again, once again, the impeachment talk is raising higher and higher the fire, the flame of impeachment, or at least talk of impeachment. As a matter of fact, I believe that bringing you the sound of Richard Blumenthal and Don Trump Jr. talking to Sean Hannity, I believe that I saw a story on The Wire saying articles of impeachment have been introduced. I have to go back and find that. Alex may be able to help me look on The Wire and see if he can find that story as well. But I believe I just saw a story saying articles of impeachment have been introduced. Now, I know the brother from Texas, I want to say Green is his last name, but I'm not sure. Has been talking impeachment for months, or for at least several weeks. And as a matter of fact, has received several death threats from people because he has dared talk about the impeachment of Donald Trump. But the question to the audience, the question to our listeners, is simple: what else needs to happen now that we've seen a scenario where Donald Trump Jr., as close to the president of the United States as anyone could possibly get, has been engaged in activity that has been characterized as possibly treasonous? That's Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now, this isn't just some commentator on the air trying to be incendiary necessarily. He's a Democrat, but still, this is serious discussion that we're going through right now. Again, I just said that I saw a breaking news story that suggested that articles of impeachment for this president, I suspect, have been introduced by someone in the Congress. We're looking for that story right now. But we want to hear from our listeners, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. What else has to happen for serious discussions or impeachment proceedings to begin against the Trump White House? What else has to happen? We've seen everything else. Now we're talking about the Trump campaign and Donald Trump's most closest surrogates, meaning his son, Donald Jr., engaging in conversations with a hostile foreign country. Let's be clear. The Trump family has tried to paint the Russians as a friendly country. I guess because they've made millions and millions of dollars doing business in Russia. So I guess they are friendly to them. But in the United States, where we live, the Russians are a hostile government. They are a hostile country. Putin has been called a thug and worse by members of Congress, Republican and Democrat. So let's not be fooled. Russia is no friend of the United States. Russia is a hostile country. Russia is a hostile government to the United States, and the Trump family seems as comfortable getting into bed with them as they are with any other business associate or colleague that they have. So let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888, and see what you all think. Let's go to Thomas first. Thomas, you're on First Edition. How you doing? Thomas? Thomas, can you hear us? Okay, let's try to go back to Thomas. 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888 is the number. What do you think about the latest allegations against the Trump White House, the email scandal connected to Donald Trump Jr., Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut talking about treason? Treason. We want to know what you all think. What else will it take for there to be serious inquiries, a serious discussion about impeachment connected to the Trump White House, to the President of the United States? Let's go back to the phones, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Jasmine in Baltimore County. Jasmine, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, Jasmine, how you doing?
I'm doing great. So I think as a progressive, as a Democrat, we're all hoping that this is the thing. I think what we're seeing is their counter-narrative and their spin control. The reality of it is, is until the base sees in black and white, in video, Donald Trump directly involved, I think even then he'll still have a lot of staunch support. But at that point, Paul Ryan cannot continue to make excuses and throw around words like naive, which they have some of their surrogates doing. I think that we're excited, but we have to also realize that the media still doesn't have real press briefings. I mean, today was yet another audio-only day, but Pat Robertson from CBN, he has an exclusive with the president, which is straight to the base.
Exactly.
So at this point, the Republican agenda is still secure because Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are still standing behind him. And until they may know all of the smoking guns, but until the public knows of the smoking guns, I think that he's safe. Even though that makes me extremely sad.
Jasmine, let me ask you this quickly. Get what you just said about the base, them having to see on video with their own eyes, Donald Trump connected in some sort of way, in some sort of criminal way, quite frankly, with the Russian government. What does that say about these people who claim to be the most patriotic of Americans? The fact that it would take this type of evidence, collusion with a foreign hostile government to the United States, in order to get them to move off of support from their man.
So what is the most important thing that it says about them is that they're very loyal, which Donald Trump values very much.
Yeah.
He's been associated with crimes, with criminals and the mob. So loyalty is important, and so he knows how to pander it, to cultivate it, and to constantly show appreciation for it, which is why he went straight to CBN. He, in other words, I need your support now more than ever. I'm coming to you because you're the only ones that matter. No one else can get a real press briefing, but I'm going to give an exclusive to you because you're the who is important to me. So they are very personally connected and invested in him, and they take an attack on him as an attack on them. And so they're going to stand behind their family, their man, no matter what. And and I think that your goal cannot be to go after his base. His base, like he said, will stand behind him if he shoots someone in the middle of New York.
Yeah.
They're going to stick with him. What you want to look at are the Republicans who are not his base and have been sticking with him for political reasons, meaning they feel like they're going to have a higher loss in the polls if they separate from him. If they become a target. And what they need is they need the real smoking gun. You're getting closer, but you don't have it yet.
Right.
Jared Kushner is updating his security clearance for, the third time? If it was a regular person, it would be snatched. It would not be approved.
Understood.
But this is not regular.
Right.
So we need reporters. We need to support them. We need to support the media. We need to buy those subscriptions. Thank God for the Washington Post, for New York Times. I mean, they are doggedly, piece by piece, helping this nation hopefully unveil the true corruption and probably the biggest conspiracy of our
lifetime. Thank you so much for your insights. We appreciate it very much. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. As I just got the news, a California Democrat has followed through on threats to file impeachment articles against President Trump, but there remains little indication that the effort will progress in the near future. The resolution filed Wednesday by Representative Brad Sherman, Democrat of California, is largely identical to a draft Sherman floated last month, one that accuses Trump of obstructing justice by threatening and then terminating former FBI Director James B. Comey, and includes language lifted from the impeachment impeachment charges against President Richard M. Nixon. So there it is. 410-319-8888. We have a few minutes left. Let's go to Thomas, who's calling back. Thomas, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hey, Sean, can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother. Yes, sir.
Listen, man, let me say this real quickly.
Okay.
My goes out, and may God rest his soul, man, the big brother, Aaron Wilk, who passed away, man.
Who? I didn't hear it yet. I didn't hear the name.
Aaron that always calls your show.
Who? Say who again, Thomas?
Brother Aaron Wilk.
Aaron. Aaron passed away?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I didn't know that. Thomas, yeah. Dang it. I didn't know that. Thank you unfortunate, yeah, for that unfortunate information out.
I'll say this, Sean. The reason Donald Trump Jr. is running his mouth now is because the special prosecutor Mueller is close to uncovering everything.
Robert Mueller, former FBI director.
Yeah, Mueller. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
And he's close to uncovering everything. But I tell you what's key to this, Sean. Donald Trump Jr. said it was him, his brother-in-law, and the campaign manager.
Paul Manafort.
Were the one who met with these people.
Yeah.
To begin with, they were asked, did you meet with anybody from Russia?
And he lied.
They said no.
He lied. He flat out lied.
So at what point, Sean, are we going to see all of this security clearances pulled away from them?
Oh, indeed. Thomas, thank you for your call. Thank you for calling back. We appreciate it. Let's take another phone call. Let's go to Lee in Baltimore. Lee, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Yeah,
okay, brother.
Hey, look. I think he should have been impeached when it first came down with Sessions. I mean, CNN played a clip one day. They was talking about Trump and his lies. Man, I know he told 30 to 50 lies, and they had it all on tape planned and fact. And, I mean, I don't understand the Congress or none of them, what's taking so long for them to impeach him. I mean, everything's in black and white. Since he's been in the president, since he one is candidacy. I mean, man, nothing been going on but just Trump drama. We don't even know what's going on in the country,
well,
but Trump drama.
Well,
so, I mean, he need to go, and he need to go now. I mean, it's a disgrace what we got, but like he said when he was running, take our country back. And now everybody see what he meant when he said take our country back.
Well, Lee, I think you echo the sentiments of millions of people. Quite frankly, thank you for your call. Let's take one more quick call. Let's go to is it Shani in Baltimore?
Yes, hi, Sean.
Hey, sis, how you doing?
Good. I just wanted to briefly say that I come from a very divided family. I'm a staunch liberal Democrat, but I also have a part of my family that's very conservative. And I know a lot of people are having trouble understanding why Trump has such a huge amount of loyalists. Well, the fact is, these people believe in him strongly. There's nothing you can do to change their mind about him. Mm. They're going to be with him to the bitter end. I hate to say it because it's a terrible future to think about, but he's not going anywhere. We're going to have to take back our country through the polls. I think the Democratic Party needs to have a lot of work done within the inside out. I think that we all need to stop complaining and vote. And I noticed a lot of people that I worked with last year who are now complaining about Trump, you know, didn't even bother to vote last year. So
right.
I really think it's in our hands and only we can do something about it at this point.
Well, Shani, thank you so much for your insights. We appreciate you and we appreciate all our callers. We didn't have a lot of time to get to calls, but all the calls were cogent. A lot of wisdom, as usual. We have the best callers, the best and most insightful callers on the air, I believe, and we don't take that for granted. So we thank you all for calling in and giving your insights into this issue. The Donald Trump saga continues to the chagrin of millions of people. We are going to take a break. When we come back, the Mod Squad will be here. That's Ted Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.
We'll be right back.
edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yeo, your host, making the transition from Trump to local politics and law enforcement, and trying to figure out how the Mod Squad can get some of that monitor money.
You know, I'm thinking we'll offer to do it for $750,000.
They gotta go. We'll undercut them.
We'll undercut them all. The three of us will do it. We'll do it live. We'll monitor them live.
Yeah,
we'll,
I love
we'll
it.
People call we'll, in and we'll tell us what's going on.
That's right. We'll live stream the monitoring.
Yeah, we'll do it for $750 straight.
It's no a discount. Tips.
They would go for that.
Right? No incidental expenses. That covers the hotels, meals, we got mileage, everything. We'll throw that all in there. And cell phones.
The Mod Squad is Taya Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network. Friends, welcome to the show. Yeah.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Sean. Thank you.
What we are talking about, if, for those of you who don't know, is there are people, organizations, entities lining up to monitor the DOJ report. The implementation of the
consent
report.
Decree.
Right.
17 of them.
And the price tag is $1.5 million.
Per
if you land $1.5 million a year, you get.
Right. So think about this.
Cash and prizes.
The Justice Department said the police department violated the law. If you or I violate the law, we get a monitor, but it's called a prison corrections officer.
Right.
Exactly. And we sit in a cell.
Right.
Now, but if you're the police department, and I know someone's going to call and say, I'm a jerk for saying this, you get a $1.5 million monitor. And there were 17 very high-priced lawyers who obviously were highly qualified lawyers. I mean, people who are highly qualified, who make a lot of money, who were sitting up there in front of this community saying, you know, don't worry about it. We'll hit you off. We'll give you a little bit. And I mean, obviously there's a ton of money involved because these people are high. These weren't like, these guys were people who probably billed $500
an hour.
Right,
and there were people from out of town too who
had
traveled.
Yeah, all over the country.
There was a former police chief from Texas there.
The police chief who was chief when the five officers were tragically murdered was actually one of the monitoring group.
It was Kroll Group.
Kroll Group, yes.
Yes.
And he was quite the public speaker. But, you know, there's a intense competition. And I think there are 21 people applied, 17. But 17 actually showed up for this hearing. And the thing is, the public input is just public input. You can leave comments in terms of, but the public doesn't get to vote or anything. It really is a decision, I believe, of the Justice Department in the city of Baltimore. But that's a lot of money. And as you can see, you know, tails I win, heads I lose, or heads I win, tails I win, or something. I mean, what's the expression? But it's going to be costly, and people are going to feast on it.
We will talk more about that situation as well as other issues in a moment.
But we want to make this official, though. We will monitor, right?
For
$750.
Right. We will give the citizens of Baltimore a discount. Well earned one.
Make the check out to who, though? Me, you?
Mod Squad.
Mod Squad. Okay, Mod Squad. We'll set up an LLC. Mod Squad LLC.
That will work.
Sean will take care of you. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
We can even cater when we.
Thank
you.
I appreciate
that. Kind of money? We got a little bit of catering on the Mod Squad half hour. And,
That'd be hip.
Yeah, we'd be really
That'd
nice.
Be real hip.
Okay.
Half
you can't spend it all on vinyl, though, like 12-inch records. You know?
No.
There's no expense for that.
No. All right. We'll come back to that in a moment, but let's go to a man who is taking the violence in this city very seriously, so seriously that he is engaged in a hunger strike.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Looking for a cessation of violence to some end. Kevin McCammett is on the phone. Kevin, thank you for joining us on the Mod Squad in First Edition.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Kevin, let's cut to the chase. What made you ultimately decide that you would engage in a hunger strike until violence is cut down in Baltimore City, until there is a cessation of violence in Baltimore City? Talk about that for us.
Yeah, so I am a lay practitioner of Zen Buddhism.
Okay.
And my hunger strike is really rooted in socially engaged Zen Buddhism. You know, I studied Gandhi a lot when I was younger, and that sort of frames the kind of spiritual, humanitarian, and you know, philosophical perspective from which I come. And then I worked in the Maryland State Prisons as a psychologist for 22 years, and some of that time was in the city jail working to bring mental health services in compliance with the DOJ lawsuit against the city jail for willful indifference to the mental health and medical needs of the detainees there. So, and then as a result of that experience, I ended up getting involved in the East Baltimore community. So for the past 5 or so years, I have been working down here, you know, doing all sorts of things that I construe as being mental health interventions, although, you know, they're not the typical kind of things that therapists do. So I've been exposed to the, what do I want to say, the contemporary manifestation, you know, of whatever it is, you know, the slave trade. These are the consequences, you know, of the African slave trade and the barriers to assimilation, you know, for African Americans into North American society.
Understood. So, understood. Kevin, let me ask you this, Kevin.
Sure.
How long have you been engaged on this hunger strike so far?
I have not eaten since Sunday at 8 p.m. Mm. So this is, you know, I don't know what, it's coming on 72 hours, I guess.
How are you feeling? Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying. How do you feel?
I'm not feeling so great right now. You know, it's been my daughter, you know, texted me this morning and she said, oh, you know, everybody says the third day is the most difficult. Mm. So maybe that's what it is. But, you know, I've been, you know, my energy has been pretty low and I've been kind of spacey, really. So,
well, that 72 hours without food will do that to you, brother, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah, I guess so, right.
But don't you also have some health issues that you have to be careful about, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, I have sort of borderline diabetes. It's, you know, I guess technically referred to as insulin resistance. So I have to make sure that, you know, my blood sugar stays within normal parameters. And so far it has. You know, I just took my... you know, did a finger stick a little while ago, and it was 80, so that's low.
Oh, that's very low.
Yeah, it's still in the normal range, though. So, you know, I'm just going to have to keep... So what I have been doing, I mean, I have some medications that I have to take, not related to diabetes. That's something that I've managed, you know, just with diet and exercise. But, you know, I have some difficulties with arthritis, so I, you know, take some pain medication and things like that. So, you know, I have actually, like, I had, a big spoonful of yogurt this morning when I took, you know, I took my medication so that, you know, I don't have the discomfort of, you know, stomach upset as a result, you know, of taking the medication.
Can I ask you something, Kevin?
Yes.
I think there have been people who have the same question. How far are you willing to take this?
Yeah, well, I'd like to take it all the way, you know. I mean, it's a scary thing to think about. I had some guys stop by here maybe about an hour and a half ago. It was actually a young guy that I met when he was a detainee in the he was actually being held at Justice Correctional Institution because, you know, they closed down the city jail, so they've been putting guys in the, you know, prisons around the area. And you know, I worked with him to help him keep in touch with his public defender and get him out of there. So I run into him on the street from time to time, and he stopped by today. And his homeboy in the back seat was basically, you know, saying, you're going to end up a hungry MF, you know, because you know, these murders aren't going to stop. I told him, well, you know, the fact of the matter is that I could end up, you know, a dead MF. So... Yeah. You know, that I try not to think about, you know, that as a consequence. I would like to believe that, you know, this is a statement. It's the thing I could think of to do that would directly communicate to people that I believe that their lives are worth, you know, putting my life on the line for.
Well, Kevin, Kevin, let me introduce this into the conversation, and sure. And I hope you don't end up a dead MF. Quite frankly, I appreciate your courage and your commitment. However, this is what I would offer to you, and I know that you have decided to do this, and it wasn't a light thing when you made the decision to take this step. But I don't know if you know about the Baltimore ceasefire that is supposed to happen between August 4th and August 6th, where we're calling for no homicides, no violence in the city for 72 hours.
No, I didn't know about that. That's wonderful.
Right. We're actually, if you want to tune in tomorrow, we'll be talking about it from 5 to 6 with two of the organizers of it. So I would say to you, maybe you could do a hunger strike for 72 hours and then see what happens August 4th to August 6th, and that may give you a bit of satisfaction spiritually to see our city go without violence and homicide for 72 more hours.
Right. That would be wonderful. Well, you know, the thing is that I've kind of committed myself to this do or die position, you know, I feel like I've got to see it through. I appreciate your, you know, I mean, that would be something that I could do that would, you know, kind of get me off the hook, so to speak. But, you know, I mean, I just don't see that there's any getting off the hook. It's not something that I went into lightly. And, you know, I don't think that people are going to take it seriously until they really see me hurt. I mean, that's the thing that
there is some good news here. I just have been going through all my emails because the police department notifies the media or anyone on their list about homicides as they occur, and I haven't seen one since Sunday.
Well, I know that there was one on Biddle and Milton at about 11 o'clock this morning.
Oh, really? Okay. I haven't gotten that notification yet. Oh, wow.
I just arrived, you know, down here. At that point, I had another appointment that I had to go to. But, yeah, it was, I got here, you know, I think a little before 11, and I went and did my midday meditation and came down, and, yeah, the guys at the center, we're talking about, you know, somebody just having been killed up there, you know. So,
Kevin, when we spoke with you the other day, you said something interesting to me, that this hunger strike wasn't just for the people who are the victims for the violence, but it was actually supposed to reach out to the people who were doing the shooting, who were actually acting on these violent impulses. And you mentioned also that you had worked as a psychologist in Jessup. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what kind of message are you trying to give to the people who might be on the verge of enacting violence?
Well, let me tell you a little story here real quick. This happened about, you know, it was a week before last, okay? So I came down here at about 8 in the morning. This was before, you know, I was thinking about, you know, this hunger strike. I've been thinking about it for a while and was thinking about it seriously then. You know, when we talked the other day, you know, you had asked me sort of like what, you know, were some specific instances, you know, that had, you know, moved me to do this. And this is one that I had forgot, that it was very important. So I come down here, the guys are on the strip talking, and there was one guy who, you know, there's a look that people get when they, you know, have murder on their mind. And I don't really know how to describe it, but I can tell you, you know when you see it, because it just is, it's an awful expression. An awful sort of energy that they're giving off. And you know, he was feeling this, and he was telling about how he had been, you know, he and his young son, you know, this is a kid who's like younger than 11 or, you know, 10, 11 years old, you know, had been out around their neighborhood the night before. You know, they had been robbed. You know, that a guy had robbed them, and you know, put a gun to his kid's head and said, "You know, I'm going to blow his brains out if he doesn't, if you don't give up the money." So they did, and not surprisingly, the kid had, a reaction to this later on, some, you know, post-traumatic symptoms.
And the father, of course, was very distraught at, you know, the what had happened and, you know, the state that his son was in, the baby's mother was, you know, like really upset and all of this. And, now, you know, I'm talking about a guy here who, I mean, he's serious in the streets, you know. I mean, this is somebody who, you know, really wouldn't think twice, you know, about picking up a gun and going and settling the score. But, you know, he had had a spiritual awakening. Hmm. And, you know, he was really struggling, you know, to, he was struggling really between his, you know, the code, which said, you know, you've got to go take care of this business, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the spiritual side that, you know, says you've got to, you know, basically, you know, turn the other cheek or at least, you know, let the guy live.
Right.
And so, the guys actually see this is an area where, you know, down here Middle East, I'm blanking on that.
Rose Street?
It's the Rose Street area. But
well, East Baltimore.
East Baltimore,
like,
yeah.
Like Milton, Monford.
Right, down the hill, as they say.
Yeah, there you go. Right, so this is an area where, you know, homicides are really quite rare because, you know, there's been a long-term history through the Rose Street Community Center of, you know, negotiating nonviolent resolutions to these. Well, I shouldn't say nonviolent, you know, because there are fights. You know, I mean, it's like one thing to, you know, take things into the alley, you know, and duke it out and you know, whoever prevails in that way. You know, everybody lives to see another day, but,
right.
You know, the beef is settled. You know, but people don't get killed very often.
Right.
So, you know, there was a lot of support for this guy. And, you know, I was able to say, look, you know, I'm a psychologist. You know, bring your son and your baby's mother. Y'all come around the center. We'll talk. You know, there's some things that, you know, we can help with this. And so, you know, he was still struggling when he left out. But the next day when I pulled out, was, you know, early in the morning, he's back on the strip again. But his demeanor was completely different.
Well, that's good
and
to
it's
hear.
And this amazing thing had happened, which is that, you know, that night, you know, the intervening evening, you know, somebody had come to him, and somebody he knew from prison and the streets and all of this stuff, and gave him back his wallet and said, you know, it was my son who did this, you know, and please don't take his life. And so they talked and, I'm not sure of all of the details, you know, there was, you know, some kind of interaction involving the kid, but, you know, he walked away from it unscathed, but the message was given, you know, that this isn't tolerable behavior. You know, so it's an example of the, you know, something that can happen that, you know, really, in this case, born of a spiritual awakening, that, you know, can really change the paradigm, really shift the paradigm of how to solve these problems, you know. And that was a moving thing, and you know, from that it really stuck, you know, in my heart. And he said, "Well, look, you know, if something like that can, move a person to struggle and make the decision, you know, not to kill somebody, then maybe, you know, if I take this stand and say, you know, I'm putting my life on the line because the lives of the shooters, you know, look, going to prison." Is I don't even know what to say about it. You know, it damages people. People find a way. There are guys, you know, who find a way to, you know, get something out of that experience that changes them for the better. But I'm telling you, they are swimming against a real strong stream. It's a, you know, it's really a meat grinder there. And I certainly don't feel like anything good is going to come from guys going to prison, you know, and certainly nothing good comes from, you know, people getting shot,
and you know, surviving and being confined to wheelchairs, or you know, having serious organ damage, or you know, whatever the case might be, you know, right. or dying. You know, I mean, nothing good comes of any of that.
All right.
So I was feeling if I can do something, you know, that really dramatizes the fact that your lives are worth something, you know, to me at any rate, you know, and you know, that victims and shooters, you know, alike, it's you're in pain, this is suffering, people who are content and happy and satisfied, you know, don't go out in the morning with murder on their mind.
Well, that's yeah. and that's true. Yeah. And Kevin, we appreciate you taking time mm-hmm. to speak with us, and I want to say, I admire your commitment, your
yes.
spiritual commitment.
Absolutely.
And I'm just prayerful that something will happen, will manifest in our city that will, as you say, let you off the hook and give you
right.
an opportunity
yep.
to get a meal. So I appreciate your time, Kevin. Thank
yes.
you so much
for
calling
you.
In.
Thank you for having me on, and please keep me in your prayers.
We will.
We will.
I'll tune in to, tomorrow night and hear all about the ceasefire.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and
thank
I hope you. He gets through this with his health intact as well.
Indeed.
I admire his spiritual dedication. I just hope his body can hold up.
Absolutely. I didn't know. I didn't ask if there were any specific goals that he had identified that were.
Well, I know there was one goal in particular that he had said that he was hoping that he could cut the violent crime in half, in essence, so that if there, he had said there was
one murder every
25 hours and 20 minutes is what he
yeah.
said very specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So he was hoping that he could get it essentially to 48 hours. That it would, so basically to cut it in half.
Yeah.
But he also had mentioned something interesting during the interview, which is that he talked about the Rowe Street and the community mediation that
mm-hmm.
they did, the conflict resolution
cure
that they had.
Model, it's
their
called.
Cure violence model, but it sounded like that they weren't receiving the same support they had previously.
No, they're funded by the Able Foundation, I think, and there was some, the city really hasn't funded, you know, it's interesting, but both all these cure violence models, and really what Kevin is doing is a cure violence model where he's not using policing or punishment, but, you know,
right.
reaching out to people in the community. They have trouble getting funds, but they seem to be much more effective.
Right.
I mean, if he prevented a homicide, he's already much more effective than any other type of policing that we've ever invented.
Well, and then, you know, we're supporting the Baltimore ceasefire movement. Mm-hmm. Each Thursday from 5 to 6, we're talking to organizers of Baltimore ceasefire, which they are endeavoring to. We're looking to have 72 hours without violence, 72 hours without homicide from August 4th to August 6th. And that is the original concept came, well, the concept for this time around came from Erica Bridgeford, who's the director of community mediation for Community Mediation Maryland, and they have done remarkable work
mm-hmm.
as well. But it's always a struggle. It seems like whenever
it
something
always
works,
like they're scrambling for funds.
When,
I don't understand this.
Whenever
yeah.
something works,
shouldn't we be throwing money at them?
Well, that's
the
what
way
I believe.
We're throwing money to a monitor. You know, it's kind of interesting that we're spending all this money for a monitor. When
right.
We could be which one monitor. The monitor is going to cost as much as Safe Streets for a year, and it's
yes,
really strange.
In essence, yes.
You know, the Real has done a lot of work. My colleague Jezel Noor has done a lot of work on Safe Streets, and I really believe, honestly, it is much more effective than policing. I mean,
right.
we need police, but I think if they, you know, spent $20-30 million on these cure violence programs, I think you'd see a tremendous drop in homicides.
Right. It is amazing that after the Department of Justice investigated our police department and we came up with a consent decree, that the decision was to put anywhere from 6 to 9 to 10 million
yeah,
$10 million
worth of, yeah.
back to into policing, into giving resources to the police department, as opposed to saying perhaps we should reallocate some of these resources.
So if we took the $1.5 million that we're going to give to a monitor, you could cut that up three ways,
mm-hmm.
$500,000 each, and give it to three organizations that are doing
exactly.
amazing work on the streets.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That would be
yeah. and
like
think about
a
what,
panacea to
one
those
of the key things I think they do is they hire people who have been incarcerated.
Right, people who live in the community
a
who
job,
need work.
A decent paying job, not as well as it should be, but a decent paying job and a purpose and people who know the people in the community. I don't think you can have anything better. in terms of win-win for everybody.
How about a $500,000 to Safe Streets, mm-hmm. $500,000 to community mediation,
right,
and $500,000 to Rose Street.
Can we throw some at Black Male Yoga Initiative too?
Let's slice off at least 100 G's to Changa Bell, another 100 G's to Cameron Miles, mm-hmm. Okay. Mentoring black teens in the hood. The list goes on and on.
Because we have evidence. We have had studies that have taken a look at these community mediation programs, these cure violence programs that show that they work. Yeah. This isn't simply just hopeful.
Dr. Daniel Webster from Bloomberg School of Health has studied it and said there's like 26% difference or something. It's amazing.
Right. He has the numbers on it. They have been effective.
Safe Streets program or a ceasefire program actually prevented, there wasn't a homicide for almost a year. I remember I covered it for Fox 45.
In Cherry Hill, which is unbelievable.
It was like a year, wasn't it? I'm not wrong on that.
No, that's correct. I remember that.
That is absolutely incredible. Yeah.
So it's really like cost effective. So even conservative people who don't like social programs,
right? It's
cost effective.
Exactly. But I think it's wonderful.
So the Koch brothers will support it.
Do you think the Koch brothers will support it?
Yep.
I just love the fact that it's actually giving money to members of the community to help them have a position of respect for them to reach out and uplift other people. Mm-hmm. I think that's powerful.
It's called buy-in.
Stephen Janis and Taya Graham of the Real News Network. They are the Mod Squad. My friends, thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
We'll see you on Friday.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good. All right, that's it for the first hour. The second hour of First Edition is coming up. It's a Wellness Wednesday. Kenyatta Moon will be here. She's founder of the Instrom Academy for Holistic Thought. She's co-host of Holistic Living. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.